250-5668. That's the Urban Health Initiative 5th Annual Peer Summit, Saturday, October 11th from 2 to 6 p.m. at Anacostia Park.
Peace, this is Atan Thomas, and you're listening to WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Yo, Chris, what you doing out of school?
Yo, man, they just suspended me, McBoo.
Word, they suspended the teacher?
Yeah, man, I'm getting so sick of this, man. They teaching us about nothing, man. You know what the bottom line is for black people out here? It's quite simple. You must learn. Yet, while the style that I speak, just deal with facts and you will never get weak in the heart. In fact, you'll start to illuminate knowledge to others in a song. Let me demonstrate the force of knowledge. Knowledge reigns supreme. The ignorant is ripped to smithereens. What do you mean when you say I'm rebellious? Cause I don't accept everything that you're telling us. What are you selling us? The creator dwelling us. I sit in your unknown class while you're failing us. I failed your class cause I ain't with your reasoning. You're trying to make me you by seasoning. Up my mind with C. Jane Run. See John walk in a hardcore New York. Come on now, that's like a chocolate cow. It doesn't exist, no way, no how. It seems to me that in a school this ebony, African history should be pumped up steadily, but it's not. And this has got to stop. See spot run, run get spot. Insulting to a black mentality, a black way of life or a jet black family. So I include with one concern that you must learn.
Hey, hey, family, welcome to the weekend. Welcome to the weekend. I know it's Thursday, y'all know, but Friday's a small thing, man. We got this. We already claiming the weekend. Let's start cruising into it. You know, it's Thursday night at 6 p.m. and your dial is on 89.3 FM or WPFWFM.org online or the WPFW app. Either way, you know you are locked in to WPFW Washington, listening to and rocking with and going to rock out the night with You Must Learn, your go-to source for all things liberatory education. We connect with folks near and abroad, talking about the issues that concern you with respect to education. I'm your cousin or your friend or your colleague that you like, not the one you don't like, and you talk about it, always eating people's stuff in the lunchroom. But my name's Damon Harris, and I'm a member of the You Must Learn Collective, and we're here in the nation's capital ready to give you some food for thought and hopefully inspire a couple phone calls and some emotion to talk with us, some questions and comments. We want to talk to you because our guests and I, we're coming to you with open minds, with open hearts, in open phone lines. I want you to call us at 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. You can use the hashtag You Must Learn. That is #, #UMUSTLEARN on social media. And we might read your comment or question on the air. We got three great topics for you tonight. The conversation is going to be, you know, led as usual by some incredible leaders in education. And first, we're going to talk to educator and author, show host, all things education expert, Dr. Tangi Reed Marshall. She's an expert, like I said, in all things within the school building. So we're interested to get her spin on what's going on today, man. It's a lot. It's a lot we're thinking about, all of us, I'm sure. So y'all can go ahead and start locking it in. Just put 202-588-0893. Just don't click send yet. You want to hear what she got to say first, and then we're going to start talking. Man, it's a bunch of stuff. And in our second segment, we're going to focus on some current events in the M part of the DMV, right? We're going to talk with William J. Ford, who's a journalist for Maryland Matters. Seems like every time I turn my TV on, man, Brother Ford is on the screen talking with some TV news anchor, right? So I'm glad I could that he could carve out some time to talk with us this evening and give us the scoop on what's going on in Maryland. And batting third in the lineup, you know, it's baseball playoff season. Although Orioles, Nationals, you know, we're not really We don't really do postseasons, I guess, around here. But we'll see. The Commanders are around. We'll see in the Caps. But anyway, batting third in the lineup tonight is the Baltimore Transformative Learning Collective. If your school is in need, if your school community is in need of change, you'll want to hear how they're doing it in Charm City, because the Be More Collective is doing their thing up there, man. They ringing bells. So y'all need to, if y'all don't know them, y'all need to. So we're going to give y'all a little taste tonight. And as always, our equally important guests are you, the listeners, because this is listener-supported radio. In fact, we'll be going to request some of your support next week as we start our fall fundraising drive. But tonight, I'd really like for you to call in, share your perspective, or ask our guests some questions. You can call us at 202-588-0893. And like I said, you can use that hashtag, You Must Learn, and we might read your question or your comment on the air. And you know, Baba Ize's show don't start without some Black history. So we're going to touch on a little bit of Black history today by talking about what happened a few years ago, well, a century and a half ago now, or a century and a quarter ago, on October 9th in 1806. One of America's true visionaries and greatest innovators, Benjamin Banneker, passed away at the age of 74. He was local, right up the street in Baltimore County, Maryland. He was born free in 1731, and his brilliance showed early. At 22, he built and engineered the first striking clock ever made entirely in the U.S. It was a clock that kept perfect time, from what I understand, for like 50 years, right, until he passed away and didn't maintain. And he had more talents than just engineering and clockmaking. He was a farmer. He was an inventor. He was a surveyor. He was a naturalist. He was an astronomer. He was an almanac author, whole bunch of stuff, man. And right here in the nation's capital, he helped to survey the land that would become Washington, D.C. And he used that in part using some of his astronomical knowledge. So I think that's pretty cool, man. And his almanacs that when he made those 100 plus years ago, they were read by farmers all over the Mid-Atlantic to give them some precise predictions with weather and tides, eclipses, stuff like that. And from what I understand, he even added like little medical hints, medical advice and some things, and some extra sort of literary points on that piece as well. And he just wasn't a builder and a creator. He was, in addition to his scientific genius, he was also an advocate for justice. He used his pen to challenge the hypocrisy of enslavement. And he wrote directly to Thomas Jefferson to demand that America live up to its founding ideals of equality and freedom. So today on October 9th, we want to make sure we're honoring our ancestors, and one of them is Benjamin Banneker. And he was way ahead of his time. So we just remind that the brilliance and the courage that we have that have shaped our region and Black history and our world in general. So it's Black history every week on You Must Learn. All right. I hope somebody's calling in now to talk to me about Benjamin Banneker even. Like, we need to make sure we're getting that in there. But first up, our first guest tonight is Dr. Tangi Reed Marshall. She is author, educator, consultant. She's host of Let's Talk Power Live, and she's CEO and founder of Liaison Educational Partners. Dr. Marshall, talk to us about who you are and what you do.
Well, who am I? I'm a wife. I'm a mother. And most importantly, I'm a grandmother. If you are a parent, you understand how fun grandkids are. And that's one of our biggest joys. I get to be a grandma of an incredible six-year-old. And along with that, I am an educator. I've been in education for nearly three decades. I run Liaison Educational Partners. Our belief is that every kid deserves an excellent education. And we want educators at every level equipped with the mindset, skill set, tools, and resources to make sure that happens. We also partner with organizations to help ensure curriculum is what I have called representationally balanced, to look at people, cultures, and topics through the widest lens possible. And that's what we do.
Got you. So we're going to definitely get into like unpacking a little bit of that so we can talk about what some of that stuff means specifically. And I know you talk about every time I've seen, well, often when I've seen you do your stuff in writing, you talk about instructional power, right? And we know that that is one of the a huge lever in our school buildings, in our classrooms that change the trajectory of our kids' lives and the communities that surround those schools. What does instructional power mean? Right? And why do you think so many educators underestimate the power that they already hold?
Let's start with the definition and helping people really understand what it is. At its basic level, it is an educator. And again, at any level, their state, their district, or their building ascribed authority to afford or constrain access to an education. You as an educator, you and I have both been in places, right? There are things that we have to do, and there are things that we get to do. And there's a lot of what we get to do that people just don't see. And that's where that power is. It comes down to the simplest of decisions. When you decide who gets to answer a question and who does not, it comes down to who gets the pass question, the easy question, that level one, depth of knowledge question versus who gets the DOK 5 question. And it's all wrapped up in one's beliefs, one's history, ultimately shaping the lens, right? Because we don't see things as things are. We see things as we are.
How about that?
And that's what that power is all about. You really, people, and to answer your next question, the reason why so many educators, again, at every level, don't want to or don't really understand power is because they see it as an external mechanism. They see it as something completely outside themselves, right? That the state is imposing, my principal is imposing, my superintendent is imposing. But in every single relationship, in every single decision, there is your power to afford, constrain, to be in partnership with or not. You make decisions, right? And unfortunately, because of that, the inherent differential in age. So there's an inherent differential in the age of the consumer or the customer, which is the kid. That right there is a power-laden relationship.
And sometimes people think that power even is about control, right? So the educator is thinking maybe I need to have control of the students, or maybe the educator in the classroom is thinking I don't have control. The principal has control over what's happening. Or the principal says the district has control and all these folks. But you were saying, like you touched on this a little bit in the first answering the first question, you often say that it's not really about control as much as it's about access.
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny, it's both and, right? Because power can be, traditional understandings of power are about control, right? We, particularly in American society, it is really in this, the way the system is set up. It is set up to understand power over someone, something. And in my perspective, we need to translate that, transform that into power with for partnership. So yeah, there is that element of control. And what we're learning, particularly, you know, lots of new reports are coming all over the place. But what we're learning about our secondary students, the more you try to put them in a control situation, the more they push back.
Yeah.
Right? This is October, Damon. And we know that the ground in schools is shaky right now because the honeymoon of the beginning of the year is over, right? The groove of September is done. And now October, with all of its demands, is really hitting. Progress reports, district demands, state demands, not to mention the federal government right now with all of its take the money, keep the money, don't give the money, right? Exactly. All of that is really creating, I will say it, a toxic environment for both learning and teaching. And what happens is people lean into what feels comfortable, and that is control. You know, and there are very, very particular biological changes happening with our students, particularly once you get into that sixth grade and beyond, that really make leaning into control problematic.
Yeah, they're trying to exercise some of their individuality, their
Their
independence.
agency.
They're yeah, they're practicing. They're trying to figure that out. So I can almost hear some of our listeners, and you can call in. You're listening to You Must Learn on WPFW Washington. I'm Damon Harris. We're talking with Dr. Tangi Reed Marshall. You can call in and talk to us at 202-588-0893. I can almost hear people shouting through the phone, like, well, tell me what I can do. Right? Like, I know you're telling me what I can't, what I shouldn't do, or what maybe like broadly speaking, what I could do, but tell me what I can do. And so in your experience, Tangi, like what are some small sort of like everyday choices that show whether someone is using the power that they have to close doors or open doors for students?
One of the very, very quick things that a person can do, particularly if you are instruct, if you are an educator at the middle school and above level, number one thing you need to do is don't fight the biology. Do you can't fight the biology's winning. Just like be clear. Do not fight the biology. Recognize that what the volatility, take a step back and pause. The number one thing to do is pause. That's the first thing to do, right? So that you can break the automatic response in your own brain. And that does not mean set yourself up for any kind of harm, physical or emotional. And what it will do is it can automatically diffuse some of that. But do not fight that biology. When a child is happy one second and they're about to blow up the next, that's because there's something weird going on inside their brain, right? The other thing I would suggest from the instructional side, look at your lessons. Are they novel? Are you building in novelty in the lesson? Because at that at the adolescent brain craves novelty. It needs novelty to click it into place, right? If you are teaching, and I used to teach grammar, and I love teaching grammar. I think it's a great fun thing to do. But if everything you do today was what you did last year, you're behind the eight ball because this year's students are not last year's students. Might be last year's content, but the kid is different. Not because the kid is so sociologically different, it's a different human being from the human being you had. So really examine your instruction to determine if you are building in meaningful novelty. I would ask them to do that. I would also say, understand that the brain loses attention faster than we think. So if you are teaching something, you have about 12-ish to 13 minutes to hold on before the brain starts leaving you. And it doesn't like leave you gradually. It falls off a cliff. Right? So I would say really learn how to understand the brain. Do not fight that biology, particularly for your adolescent learners, because the biology is a real thing. I also would say examine your own understanding of power. Do you lean into power protecting by what I mean is, do you lean into when something happens, you go into defense? Right? Do you defend? Right? Do you help your students, one, name agency? Do they have the language of agency itself? Do you help them exercise it in ways that are productive and don't set them up for the referral train? Right? Because we know what data says about black and brown children, that they are four times more likely to be referred and or suspended for very similar small infractions. Think about your understanding of power so that you move out of power protecting and into agency development and empowerment. And then I would say differentiate between voice and agency. Voice is hearing what I say. Agency is hearing what I say and allowing me to do stuff about it. You can have voice and no agency. But if you've got agency, your voice is there.
There we go. So, and it's about, like you said, it's about folks either resisting biology or are we going to leverage biology?
Leverage the biology because it's going to win. Biology is winning.
Yeah. And so we're almost out of time. We got like 1 or 2 minutes left, but sure. I want to make sure we touch on Let's Talk Power Live. Yeah. You've been running that show for over a year now, and I hear you expanding it. You're bringing in some guest voices. Like, what should people know about Let's Talk Live?
Let's Talk Power Live is really based upon my book, Understanding Your Instructional Power. So we break down the four components of instructional power, the environmental side. And we really highlight power in education in real ways. Been out for about a year now. We are bringing guests in from all across the spectrum, some folks from higher ed, some math folks.
Recording in progress.
Lots of different avenues by which people can exercise their own power and really share with the world. It's live on YouTube. It's usually at 12 noon on Thursday, but we're moving it. Starting October 30th, we will have our first guest, Dr. Alicia Blackwood from Longwood University, the author of Mbutu Pedagogy, and we will be doing the show at 5:30 p.m. to allow more people to see us and join us for the show.
All right, that's awesome. So I'm sure folks are interested in what you have to say. So I know I am. And there any, we're about out of time. Any last bits of wisdom, or how can people get in touch with you, find out more about you? Like, what can we do? How can we hear more?
Hear more. One, first things first, go ahead, get the book, Understanding Your Instructional Power. It really unpacks and takes a deep dive into what instructional power is all about. Chock full of resources, strategies, and skills. Always on our website, liaisoneducationalpartners.org. And that's where you can find us. And again, go ahead and see us on Let's Talk Power Live on YouTube. Join the channel.
All right. Dr. Tangi Reed Marshall, we are grateful to talk with you. You are all things education and CEO and founder of Liaison Educational Partners. We appreciate you for coming through tonight and hanging out on You Must Learn.
Thank you. All right, Damon. Thank you so much for being here.
You got it. And family, we are just on the other side of a break. We're going to talk to Mr. William J. Ford from Maryland Matters. He's going to talk to us about all things M in the DMV with respect to education. He's the guru that we all go to nowadays when we want to know what's going on. But we'll take a quick break listening to my guy, Corey Carter, Mr. Carter, in Code Switch. And this is You Must Learn on WPFW.
Typically, I gotta stick to this, cause I'm navigating the school system's wickedness, inflictedness, twistedness, politickedness. Only trust those I've witnessed get through the thick of this. Moles, these wins gotta go get those. Words I kick, flick meanings like skateboard tricks, bro. I'ma represent as long as I exist, so I never misspoke. Get familiar with my zip. Like acid, deoxyribonucleic, we got the vibe on street credit. We taught decipher new phrases, we thought the typos, you hit it. Please stop revival to save it. Phenotypical translate, genes got me slide on the basics and say, the chest, you not the one to play with. Palindrome, two-face, efficacious. Felt my enemy slip as I say this. Coding the traits and mutations. In the methods we making, bold statements. You see, survival is coded in nature. Situation switches how I got over when faced with this unnatural selection. The noose of racism caused the bottleneck's compression. The colorblind lens caused the model misdirection. Right. To blame the very victims for evolving disaffection.
What's that about, really?
And this is Code Switch.
Yeah.
Sustained hit football coach, Coach Prime. Coach, how you feeling today?
No, straight up.
I always ask how you feeling.
You was not talking like that just 2 minutes ago.
I'm Damon Harris. We are easing into the weekend talking about all things liberatory education on WPFW FM 89.3 in Washington, D.C. in the Metro. And you can find us also on WPFWFM.org online. Just click listen live. I hope you must be doing that already. But if you're not, you got a different way. And we got a new way for you right now to stay connected to us. It's the WPFW app. It's brand new off the press, so to speak. You can keep it in your pocket and take Jazz and Justice everywhere you go. Now, we're going to talk now. We just talked about sort of instructional power in the school building. And now we're going to take a macro approach to this conversation and look at what's happening in the education policy ecosystem. And there's nobody I know in the DMV who's more equipped to talk about that than Mr. William J. Ford from Maryland Matters. Welcome to the show, brother.
Welcome back. What's up, Dr. Damon Harris? I got to put the doctor in there because you earned that, bro. How about that?
Appreciate you, man. So I was telling folks before you hopped on, man, I was telling the audience that every time I turn on my TV, it seemed like I'm seeing you talking to some news anchor, man, about what's going on. So we're glad that you could carve some time out to talk to us, brother. We know you're busy too.
Hey.
So let's start off, man, with kind of like some retrospective stuff. Like I saw a couple weeks ago, I think it was from you, that like the former Morgan State president, Earl Richardson, passed away, right? Like maybe a month ago or thereabouts. Can you talk to, because some folks might not know about Dr. Richardson and what he was doing. Can you talk a little bit about what made him so influential and why we should know?
Oh, absolutely, man. You have Dr. Richardson. He was a major figure. And he was the president at Morgan State University for about 26 years, which was the second longest tenure ever behind John Oakley Spencer, who served at Morgan State as president for 35 years. But besides Dr. Richardson's influence on Morgan with student initiatives, he helped bring in about $500 million in renovations to the campus there in Baltimore.
Eesh.
But one of the biggest influences, it began in 2006. He helped with a group being able to be formed called the Coalition for Equity and Excellence in Maryland Higher Education. Coalition sued the state of Maryland for education equities, such as allowing predominantly white institutions to create undergraduate and graduate programs already offered at HBCUs. Now, that's not allowed in Maryland. It's a law. Can't do that. However, it can be done in other states, like North Carolina. So what Dr. Richardson did, now see, here's the thing. He could not be a part of that lawsuit because he was a state employee.
Himself. Yeah.
That's right. But he was received as being the major behind the scenes individual with it because he provided history on what happened at schools like Morgan. And right. So the state settled for about $577 million in 2021, which ended a 15-year lawsuit. So,
man. And I've seen, but some of the HBCUs might be saying they ain't see that money. Right.
It's, you know how things go. Right? It takes such a long time for that money to get put in. And see, look, that's part of the work. Mm-hmm. Even though that passed 4 years ago. And matter of fact, there was a bill signing ceremony for that.
Right.
But as you know, it just takes such a long time. But that's where higher education advocates have to step up and just say, hey, is our funding coming in? That lawsuit settled. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure some of that money gets into our universities.
Yeah, man, this stuff, like each success is a first down, not a touchdown, right? Sure. You know what I mean? Like we got to keep it moving. Everybody got to keep it moving down the field. And I also read from you recently that you were writing about the test scores in Maryland, right? And saying like, hey, there's some stuff going up, you know, by, you know, ticks, a little ticking up here and there, but not everybody made all the gains that we'd like to see. Can you talk to us a little bit about like how Maryland students made some gains on the test scores, but not maybe Black and Latino students, how they fared?
Yeah, that's something, Damon, you probably have studied this in your particular work in dissertations, what you've had to assess what's going on in public schools. Now, this particular latest test was the Maryland Comprehensive Assessment Program, called, or nicknamed the NCAP. And students took it this past spring. It showed nearly about 51% of students were proficient in language arts. That's an increase from, I think, about 48% in the 2023-2024 school year. And also, the results mark the third straight year of language arts increases, gains that are made being attributed in part of the science of reading curriculum that State Superintendent Carrie Wright brought in with her from Mississippi, where test scores rose significantly while she was superintendent there. Well, here's where some of the gaps come in, man. Let me just start with a particular subject. I'd start with, I believe it's science. So about 68% of Asian students were proficient in science compared to about 53% in the 2023-24 school year. It's good. White student proficiency rose about 40% to nearly 49%. Here's the problem. You have Latino students. They went from about 11.7% proficiency to about 17.1%. Mm. Black students rose 12.3% to 17%. Students with disabilities, 4.9 to 6.4. Economically disadvantaged students, 10.6, 15.5. All those increases is below 20%. It's nearly doubled. It's more than double of white students. More than double. So we have I could read math, other subjects. It's just, it's a mind shaking of why there's a continuation of why black students and Latino students are just not getting the same results.
Right. And like the data is saying that you just stated, it's still saying you a coin flip if you're a white student. Right. As to whether or not you're going to be meeting with success or at least with proficiency. So, yeah, it's not good all the way around. And I hear that things are doing, and I read your writing, and I see that the state is saying we're doing some things in Maryland. So like the Maryland Blueprint for Education, Blueprint for Maryland's Future has the Accountability Implementation Board. And then we have the school board from Maryland State Department of Education. Like, those folks are supposed to be doing some additional measures that are supposed to support these lower scores. Can you talk about that, or like what these two boards are doing?
Yeah, a little bit. This is also like with when we talk about the lawsuit, the work won't come quickly, but they did approve at least additional boost in student metrics and student achievement. So what was done? You had the Blueprint Board, and let me step back. So the Blueprint for Maryland's Future is this 10-year, multi-billion-dollar education reform program, and it's scheduled to continue through June of 2030. And what it's looking to do, in terms of one of the metrics, is dealing with decreasing in absenteeism, for example. You have former Montgomery County Executive Isaiah Ike Leggett. And he said, well, and this is a direct quote, if children aren't in school, then they aren't able to learn. So we must have children in school. So that's one example they're looking to do is decrease chronic absenteeism. It was like 30% a few years ago.
Right.
The current figure is about 25%. And the state of Maryland's law, chronic absenteeism is when a child misses about 10 days in school. And the state law, you have to be in school for 180 days.
And 10% of the days. So
yes, 10%. Days. Thank you, sir. Like thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Thank you for that. It's mind-boggling. But you look at Maryland, certain pockets of Maryland is one of the best. As a matter of fact, Maryland is the fourth most diverse state in the country. That's according to the most recent census. Mm-hmm. If it's that diverse as a state, should be student achievement that matches that diversity. So it's a conundrum going on here.
Yeah, I agree, man. And so what about our elected officials, man? Like, are they doing anything? Can state legislation help with this?
Well, that's kind of what's going to be discussed, bro. Now, you got these legislative priorities that the state board and the blueprint board need to discuss. And one of those priorities is trying to fund this coaching program, which the legislature did approve, but they did not approve the funding to go with it. So what the state board and the blueprint board is they're going to be looking to do is just basically waving their hand. Hey, state lawmakers, can you approve the funding to go with this coaching program? And you know a lot about coaching, which helping experienced educators help teach those who may not have as much experience. Problem is, in terms of funding, the state went through a major budget battle. And so now we have a new administration in office. And the new administration is taking out scissors and wanting to cut. Just throw up something in the air and the scissors will go up and just start cutting. And I'm not being facetious. I mean, this has been out publicly, literally. And wanting to just, you know what, we have too much stuff. Let's just cut it. But without assessing, if you cut it, the dominoes will fall somewhere else and then continue to fall.
I hear that, man. It's scary, man. Maybe AI can help. I don't know, man. Now you're listening to WPFW, listening to You Must Learn on WPFW. I'm Damon Harris talking with William J. Ford of Maryland Matters. So AI, man, like I saw you write something about this too, man. What's going on with AI in schools nowadays?
Well, that's another question we're trying to figure out. There's this University of Maryland professor, Jin Liu, and he's associate professor of education and public policy at the University of Maryland. I mean, he said one problem is there aren't many artificial intelligence policies in place. And here's a direct quote. The AI space is developing really, really fast. All the AI tools are developed at lightning speed, end quote.
There you go.
That's a problem.
And that is the way bureaucracy works. Bureaucracy does not work at lightning speed.
Not even close. And so, in the meantime, the state is working on guidance for all of the Maryland's 24 school districts. That may come at the end of this particular school year. So we're looking at possibly May or June. But local school leaders can still work on local AI policies that have been done at least two places in Calvert and Prince George's counties. Now, State Superintendent Dr. Carrie Wright, she did tell me in an interview late this summer that AI tools can help teachers craft lesson plans and inform students to what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, for example. But she also gave advice in a direct quote from Dr. Wright. Things I would hope they're doing is developing lesson plans that are aligned to our standards. That's because our statewide assessment is aligned to our standards. We don't just want a hodgepodge of things being taught, end quote. That's why the statewide standards or the statewide guidance is going to be so key. Because you could have four different school districts doing something else. You can have two doing something else. So it's hopefully we're going to see something come into play. But in the meantime, you may have like nine different pieces of technology of AI that's being developed right now or will be developed.
Right. Some of them by probably some of our current students, for that matter. We about out of time. Mr. Ford, how can people find out more about your work, read your stuff?
Well, you can go on MarylandMatters.org. You can see if I post anything on social media on Instagram at Jabari Will. That's JABARIWILL 2809. And you can always send me an email at WFord@MarylandMatters.org.
There we go, man. You got some stuff you think he should be covering, or you want to hear some of the stuff that he's doing? He's the man. He's the man. Appreciate you. Brother William J. Ford of Maryland Matters. I appreciate you coming through tonight, brother.
Always, man. You just holler at me, Dr. Harris. You know what's the deal, brother?
My God. All right, family. We got one more break. And on the other side, we're going to talk about a group that is transforming the lives of educators, students, and community members in Charm City. It's the Baltimore Transformative Learning Collective. Don't go anywhere. My wife told me it's no te vayas. Don't go. All right. So we're going to hear something on the other side of this break. I know y'all was saying, what's that song again? We're going to play it one more time. Code Switch by Mr. Carter, Corey Carter, working at UMBC with one of our guests who's coming up. So You Must Learn on WPFW.
Typically
see, I gotta stick to this, cause I'm navigating the school system's wickedness, inflictingness, twistingness, politickingness. Only trust those I've witnessed get through the thick of this. Moses wins, gotta go get those words I kick, flick meanings like skateboard tricks, bro. I'ma represent as long as I exist, so I never miss, bro. Get familiar with my zip. Like acid, deoxyribonucleic, we got the vibe on street clear. We taught the cipher new phrases, we taught the typos, you hate it. Please stop revival to save it. Phenotypical translate, genes got me slide on the basics. And say, the chest, you not the one to play with. Palindrome, two-faced essence, their cases. Felt my enemies slip as I say this. Coding the traits and mutations. Changing the methods we making. Bold statements. You see, survival is coded in nature. Situation switches how I got over when faced with this unnatural selection. The noose of racism caused the bottleneck's compression.
Welcome back, family, to You Must Learn, a WPFW. You're hearing this? You're probably listening to us on 89.3 FM if you're in the district. If you're outside a region, you might be listening to WPFWFM.org and clicking that Listen Live button. And some of you are, what they call them, early adopters. You might be rocking with the WPFW app, because that's our newest way to get in, to stay in touch with us, to stay connected to Jazz and Justice 24 hours a day. We'll never leave your side because, unfortunately, man, we all addicted to these phones, and these phones never leave our side. So just come on in and be a part of what we're doing. We can't wait to keep you plugged into the ecosystem so you can hear what's going on. Speaking of what's going on, next week we have our fall fundraising drive kicking off. So we hope that you, this is listener supported radio. We hope that you will bless us in the future, the very near future. All right, I'm Damon Harris, and I'm about to talk to the group that's ringing bells in Charm City in Baltimore. It's called the Baltimore Transformative Learning Collective, and they are partnering with the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. So one of their partners came in to join this conversation as well. I'm going to step back and let that team introduce themselves to the You Must Learn family.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having us. We're so excited to be here. We are Be More Transform, or the Baltimore Transformative Learning Collective. We are four educators who are part of an abolitionist educator worker cooperative. And we work really hard to trying to decolonize Baltimore's educational ecosystem. And we're starting to branch out and do some of our work in other counties, in other institutions and universities. So we're really excited to be here and share more about not just the work that we're doing, but how we move through spaces and places. And we also have Dr. Amy Tondreau with us, who is one of our partners. Very excited that she came on.
Yeah. And so I mentioned earlier, Amy Victoria, you want to say anything before I start talking? The family knows I like to talk a lot.
Sure. I'll just quickly introduce myself. I'm Victoria Lebron. I'm one of the co-founders and a worker partner at Be More Transform with Gab, and absolutely adore working with Amy and Katrina, who couldn't be here. But that's it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm here representing university partners with Be More Transform. We love working with them. I'm Dr. Amy Tondreau. I'm an associate professor of elementary literacy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And the other member of our team who couldn't be with us is Dr. Katrina Andrusik, and she's at the University of Maryland College Park. And we adore the work that these guys are doing and are excited to be a part of it with them.
I also realized I just totally jumped in and did not say anything about myself. So I am Gab in true form. I'm Gab. I use they, she pronouns, Gab Sussman. And as Victoria said, I'm one of the co-founders and one of four worker partners at Be More Transform.
Do you want to mention who the other two workers are in
there? Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Brandon Rashad Butts and Leary Janae Jones are, two other wonderful people.
Incredible worker partners. Yes.
Yes.
All right, cool stuff. So like the stuff we've been talking about with the first two guests during the first 45 minutes of the show has really focused a lot on the educators in the buildings as being people who carry out policy,
mm-hmm.
right? Being people who kind of do the stuff that they are told to do or allowed to do. And when I talk to you three, like I get a sense that there are ways that folks can move from being these policy implementers to being people who are policy influencers or policy creators. Like how can you talk about how that happens? Like when they become influencers rather than people who just carry out directives?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is it takes a really deep personal level to reframe and shift your mindset from just being someone who is a cog in a machine versus someone who has agency and has resources in order to help inform and change policy at the school level and even at the district level. So it starts with disrupting our internalized capitalism and white supremacy, which again takes a lot of not just emotional intelligence, but you know, self-awareness and a lot of energy and inner work to both be able to identify what those things look like within ourselves and then do the work to disrupt those pieces. And internalize, you know, capitalism and white supremacy, they overwork us and they put us in these silos, which leave us feeling disengaged, disempowered, and maybe even burned out, which, you know, one of our other worker partners is always like, don't get me started on burnout, because it's everywhere. And it's a very violent process that happens to a lot of people across sectors, but that's for another day. And it also takes moving in a way where you're able to position your values at the center. So oftentimes as educators, again, it's assumed that we just listen and do and pass on what was told to us or what the curriculum says or what we're expected to do and just carry it out. However, we are multifaceted, complex humans, and we are allowed to, and in many ways, our students are expecting us to show up in a way that is authentic to not just them, but to ourselves. And oftentimes that means really wrestling with what do I believe? What do I want for my students? What do I want for myself? And are these policies or are these new rules or is this handbook in alignment with what I believe?
Yeah. But you're talking like at the individual level, that is certainly where it starts. And I know Tanji Marshall, who was just talking to us earlier, was saying that, you know, you don't see the world as it is. You see the world as you are, you know, but you also, like, you're a collective.
Yeah.
So I know your work centers on collective action too. Like, what does coalition building look like when the goal is to create those equitable and sustainable school policies that you're talking about? Like, how do you sustain those coalitions when you create them?
This is such a great question. And it's like fully in, it's like one of my Roman empires that I love to talk about, or soapboxes, as Gab would say, because effective coalition building, it boils down to making time, right? Operating with intentionality and developing trusting relationships. This all, like, it requires energy, but it is worth it because, I mean, it's kind of linked to like just good old fashioned organizing. Where you're meeting people in person, you're shaking hands, you're talking to people about what they care about, and Be More Transformed started from the coalition building work that we did when we were on the same teaching team at the same school. And it has built now to something that I can say, I'm very proud of our ability to build relationships because we approach potential collaborations, meeting new individuals, new organizations with a sense of curiosity, because we genuinely do want to know about people. And so I think that's something to hold is like, are you able to be curious? And are you able to like give time, which time is so precious? And that's part of what I notice as a parent is such a scarce resource in schools these days. And something is like a mindset shift for us where it's like, how do I know, I feel like I have no time. How do I make time? Because mm-hmm. this is important. And I know that there's other people out there like me. And if we can get together and talk about what we care about, what changes we want, and I mean all stakeholders, I don't mean just the teachers, just the admin. I mean, we're talking to kids, we're talking to adults, we're talking, you know, we're talking to all the people that have a stake in the school, in the system, succeeding and being sustainable.
Yeah, and sometimes like the coalitions that we end up building are organic, like you two working in the same school and gravitate toward, like minds gravitating towards each other. But oftentimes those coalitions, the coalition building needs to be strategic mm-hmm. because we need it to happen faster or in a different way some of the time. So I get that. But often that may be tied to educators who don't know their own influence, right? Mm-hmm. They underestimate their power. How can teachers and school leaders kind of strategically leverage their positionality in their spaces? Like they don't just have access to the students and the curricula, et cetera. They also have their own voice, their own expertise, right? Their own trust and social capital they built in their communities. Like that, how can people like get over that imposter syndrome, I guess?
Yeah, we talk to a lot of educators who are leading with their own identities and their own experiences. And so they're racialized experiences, their religious experiences, their linguistic backgrounds. I work with a lot of teachers who identify as having disabilities or neurodivergence, and they bring all of who they are to their teaching and to their leadership. So they are talking to parents who are worried about their students being labeled with disabilities and being put on IEPs, and they disclose their own neurodiversity, right? And show parents examples of happy, fulfilled adults who have, you know, these different labels, but use it to benefit their students, right? So we have teachers who have ADHD and they know how difficult task initiation is for them. So they know that they do best when they body double, right? When they have somebody sitting next to them who is also working, maybe not on the same task, but also helps them focus, right? So they can set that up in the classroom for students to do. We have autistic teachers who know about sensory seeking and sensory avoiding behaviors, and they bring like a variety of different sensory tools into their classroom and let students experiment with what helps them focus, right? So we have a teacher who teaches science, and just as a part of the genetics lesson, they were making, you know, DNA with pipe cleaners and popping on like one for my brown hair, one for my ADHD, right? And just sort of normalizing that as a part of the discussion, right? That all of who teachers are come with them into their classroom. And that's not something that can be legislated away, right? We are whole people in our classrooms interacting with our students as whole people. And that also means we're following students' leads, right? Victoria was just talking about all stakeholders, including kids. And so if we share what kids are passionate about, the questions that they're asking us, and, you know, make their work visible and bring them into the feedback loops, right? Ask them what's working about how school is for them and what's not working, right? And it's it might be easier for folks to disagree with teachers' opinions, right? But we can all agree that we're centering students, right? And we all are on the same team with trying to benefit our students. And so letting their voices shine through, I think, is really important. And that involves, like, it can feel uncomfortable because it involves opening up your practice a little bit, even when things don't feel perfect, right? When a policy isn't something you agree with, we often tend to shut our doors then and close down. But we need to sort of open our doors at that point too and say, like, look at the impact that this policy is having or this curriculum is having on our students, mm-hmm. right? We want that to be visible to people.
Right.
And, you know, that's how we show the impact of policies and help to shift opinion because we see the tangible impact on what it looks like in the classroom.
And so, that becomes that cycle that feeds itself. When you say you get a little success, you want to do a little more, you get a little more success, you get that dopamine drip, like, oh, okay, I can do this. Yes. So I know folks are going to want to, who've been listening, are going to want to get in touch with one or all of you at the Baltimore Transformative Learning Collective or UMBC or UMD. We're connected to them as partners. How can people find out more about the work that you're doing?
Yeah, we have a website. It's bemoretransform.org, where you can learn more about, you know, all the things that you're doing, as you just said, and as we've been talking about. But we're also on Instagram because we are highly visual and millennials. But our Instagram handle is bemoretransform. We do a lot of work.
Be More as in Baltimore's Be More family. Yes. We're outside of the region. So BMORE.
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you, Damon. Yeah.
Yes. I have a website. It's sustainingdisabilityidentities.com and also on Instagram at sustainingdisabilityidentities. And folks can also check out Liberation Libations, which is a
recording stopped.
Oh, go ahead. Keep on.
If people are local, we have a Be More Transform runs a session once a month on Friday evenings for all folks serving youth.
And with that, we got to put a pin in our conversation. Folks need to get in touch with you. Thank you so much for Amy Victoria Gabb-Sussman from UMBC and the Baltimore Transformative Learning Collective. Be More Transform, BMORE. transform.com
.org.
.org. All right. And we're out of time, family. It always goes too fast when I'm here talking with you. I'll be back in 2 weeks because I'm sitting in for my guy, Dr. Daryl Howard. Next up, we got Tim Masters with Jazz Masters. And until the next time, family, I'll say peace and be safe. Love y'all.
DC Palestinian Film and Arts Festival is back this October with powerful Palestinian storytelling through live performance, films, and discussions with artists and activists, a culinary workshop, and a special children's program. The festival kicks off on Thursday, October 9th, and runs through Sunday, October 12th at MLK Library and other venues. On Friday evening, the festival will present the DC premiere of A State of Passion, which follows Dr. Ghassan Abu Sittah, who, after working around the clock in Gaza under relentless bombardment, has become the face of a global resistance. Details at dcpfaf.org.
Brentwood Arts Exchange presents the Listening Room Series. The next concert is Friday, October 10th, 8 to 10 p.m. featuring singer-songwriters Ayanna Gregory and Free Benjamin with an evening of music filled with love, healing, and transformation. On November 7th, Sheikh Amala Jabate performs and Rose Morales on December 5th. Three nights of live music at the Brentwood Arts Exchange. Details via 301-277-2863. That's 301-277-2863, pgparks.com, or on social media at Gateway Arts Center.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more. All right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice wherever you are.
WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio.